Hi, I'm Tony. Thanks a lot for inviting me to give the talk. I'm an independent researcher based in Ithaca, and that's. Do I have a?
Actually, we want you to use the mouse.
Okay, I'll do that. Where's the mouse? Is it this? Okay. That's my company, which consists of me, my Twitter handle. You can follow me if you want. My website, and I believe in open sourcing all my code. I only charge for my time when I work with clients, so all my code is on GitHub, so you can check it out. Okay, so typically when we do agricultural experiments with plants, we have a rich replication structure, right? So I'm coming from kind of a genetics perspective, but this can be generalized to any kind of experiment. So we typically would have some populations in different maybe genotypes planted, but then they're replicated over years, fields and rows or plants, and then a bunch of traits are measured, right? So this kind of setup traditionally has been analyzed using these mixed models, right? Where, and I'm generalizing it to a multi-trait or a multivariate situation where you have your response is a matrix with columns being your traits, for example, and then the rows are the individual data points. Then we have fixed effects and some random effects and errors. From the Bayesian perspective, the difference really between the fixed effects and the random effects is just a matter of what kind of prior you're using. Everything is a random variable. So, and then the assumptions usually are that the errors are normally distributed and they are independent, so the, each row is independent. Typically, maybe the random effects are also modeled as normal with random independence among rows, although in genetics, we often have genetic relationships between our accessions that we're testing, so there actually are, it's a matrix variate distribution with the rows. Also covarying with some genetic relationship matrix is a covariance matrix. The thing about the mixed model, though, is that we're, for example, using this design matrix to, and we're, you know, to estimate our things, we have to invert it and so on. It's huge, but it's completely sparse, and we actually know the something about it other than it just being a big slab of. Right, so step back, sorry, for a second. This model can be analyzed both with likelihood methods and Bayesian methods. So the base, you know, once you write it down, the inference engine is kind of independent of the actual formulation of the model. So the likelihood is more focused on hypothesis testing, deriving point estimates of parameters, and usually confined to Gaussian distributions. I guess people still cling to some idea that there is some analytical tractability to all of this. Bayesian methods, by contrast, we're estimating the posterior probability, which is likelihood times the prior, so we have some prior information that we incorporate. Also, typically we're focused on estimating some particular subset of parameters that we're actually interested about, and everything else we're trying to ignore, but Bayesian methods allow you to integrate out the uncertainty in those parameters that we don't care about. And we expand the set of distributions because we've given up on analytical tractability a long time ago. So again, coming back to our typical experiment, when we're looking at that design matrix, we can reformulate it because we know that we have nested experiments. Plus the design matrix kind of ignores the fact that we have nested structure. Instead, we're using these hierarchical models, which were already introduced, so I don't have to do all that much work, but the basic idea is that for a given, say, location parameter, like a replicate here, we're estimating the posterior probability. The likelihood depends on the level below, and that's kind of, you know, say, your mean with some covariance, and the prior comes from the level above. And then you can string these levels infinitely, essentially, right? Another nice feature of this is that given that you've set this prior here, this likelihood is independent of anything above. So that makes it computationally more tractable. And so then coming back to our mixed model, we kind of use this hierarchical structure to estimate out all of the random effects of the experiment and focus just, say, for example, in this case, our genetic component, which would be instead of using a straight mixed model, we take principal components of our, say, genetic relationship matrix and do a regression on that, which is a penalized regression. And you can have a prior on these coefficients. We use all of the principal components and estimate our genetic effects. So I've implemented this whole thing in C++ and wrote a library which can be plugged into your own software, and this is where you can get it. And it uses Gibbs sampling, so to go back here, we want to sample from marginal distributions, so we want to integrate our nuisance parameters, but math is easy if you are sampling from conditional distributions. So given what we know, the parameters we know here, 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 we sample a value here, then we move on to this, sample this variable, and so on. So Gibbs sampling allows us to step through and sample from conditional distributions and magically end up in the end with marginal distributions. And then, so the library that I've written uses careful resource management and is multi-core. So is fairly computationally efficient. And to figure out if it works, I simulated 10 traits here with different correlation structure and replicated it in two levels, three times, once, and then twice within. And then I had 750 individuals from three populations. So I had a genetically heterogeneous set. And I spiked in outliers because that's often what happens. You have some messy data, missing data, and so on. And I looked at the truth that I know versus the estimates from the different models. So first I ran a single trait model with Gaussian errors. And this is the accuracy of my breeding values. So that's basically the accuracy of that mixed model parameters that I get. So this is what I get with a single. Once I use a multivariate model, everything jumps up. These five traits are intercorrelated, so that you get a decent bump. These are pairs of correlated traits. This trait is not correlated with anything, so you have a very modest bump as you expect. But it's very hard to actually simulate completely uncorrelated things, so there is some residual thing. A big bump in accuracy comes if we, instead of assuming that our errors are normally distributed, we assume that they're student T distributed with a low degree of freedom. In this case, I used 3. So that dampens the effects of outliers because the student T distribution has fatter tails, so the tails don't affect the mean so much. And then geneticists like to play around with the various genetic models. And that's basically where all of the literature is focused on, trying to come up with different priors on these parameters of the relationship matrix. And I use, say, a student T instead of a Gaussian prior, and this is the purple things. They make essentially no difference in this case. So another thing that we can do with these multivariate models is we can impute missing data. So in this case, I masked 20% of my data in one trait and kept all the others known. So then I pretended I didn't know the values, and then I'm comparing again to the known truth from the simulation. So this is the control where these are the accuracies for an unmasked model. This is the imputation for a single trait model. So there's genetic relationships between the individuals, so it gives you some information. So it's not a zero accuracy, but it's low. So for trait 1, which is correlated with a bunch of different traits, we get a nice bump when we use a multivariate model. Same thing with trait 6, which is strongly correlated with just one other trait, and not a whole lot for the trait that's not correlated with anything else. So that's what you'd expect. So as a summary, these hierarchical models are really flexible. You can mix and match these levels essentially infinitely. Multi-trait models are more precise in general. They're more efficient because computation is per data point is more efficient because of the way LAPACK libraries, say, work. The traits can be regular traits, or they can be multi-environment, quote-unquote, traits. So, for example, you're measuring yield in different kinds of environments. Those could be used as different traits. In this case, the error covariance matrix has to be a little bit carefully defined. And then you can use sparse testing, for example, taking advantage of deliberately missing data, so not replicating completely. And as much as in genetics we obsess about genetic models, it seems like proper modeling of the experiment and the effects of the outliers is more important than your genetic model. And if you have correlated traits, you can impute missing data. And so all of this is great, but there are you can write down any kind of model, it doesn't mean it will converge, basically. So Gibbs sampling has limits. For example, we're using conjugate priors. So these are Wishart priors on a covariance matrix, which is Wishart is the multivariate chi-square. And that induces some distortion. MCMC is relatively slow, so Gibbs sampling is good because it directly samples from the posterior, so there's 100% acceptance probability. But Gibbs samplers have pathologies. They get stuck when there's posterior correlations between variables. So there are ways to get around that. There's parameter expansion methods that have been used. And I'm actually looking into the Hamiltonian Monte Carlo instead, because that seems like a better way to have a more automatic. There is a lot of art to fitting Bayesian models with Gibbs sampling, I'm searching for ways to make it more automatic so people can just write down their model and have it converge fairly but robustly. Yes, and that's it. Yeah.
We have time for a couple questions.
Yes?
So I guess a very beginner question, but so your prior probability, is that something you get from your own data, or is it like a type of...
Right, so...
How does that work?
I'll show you. Here. So... Here is, so when you're in the middle of the hierarchy, right, the priors come from data because you keep estimating parameters as you move up, right? So given that you've estimated this, you now move up to this, estimate this the same way, and your prior is coming. Eventually you get to the top, and that's where you need to put some kind of prior, like a real one. And, you know, if you have a lot of data, it doesn't really matter what kind of prior you use, but... That depends. People try to use vague priors or non-informative priors. There's probably about 50 years worth of literature and arguments, and depends on the richness of your model. The more complicated the model, the less possible it is to have an uninformative prior. So you have to be careful about that in practice. But for simple things, you just give it a really high variance Gaussian prior, and you're good. Oh yeah, you can do that too, right? If you have your own, research program, say from 1 year to the next, you can. It is absolutely rigorous to use results from the previous year as a prior for your next year, definitely. Yes.
For the uninitiated who are stuck in the effects models, what's the learning curve moving into MSK?
So it's kind of orthogonal. So you can analyze, say, the mixed effect models with a Bayesian approach or a likelihood approach. So that's not really different. Actually, to me, whole regression and these mixed models make a lot more intuitive sense from a Bayesian perspective. Basically, you don't have to decide what is the random effect, what is the fixed effect. It's just a question of what prior you're using. So for these, we have, for the fixed effects, quote unquote, we have a very uninformative prior, and for random effects, we have a shrinkage prior, which is, has parameters that are estimated from the data.
Thank you all for coming. I hope it would be one of many more Bayesian method sessions in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.